And that giant cacophony tells you you're back with the Power of Three podcast on day five of our Doctor a Day run as we build up to the launch of the new series with Shuti Gatwa. It's still not catching on. Oh well, we're talking about a fifth Doctor book today, not a fourth Doctor. We're not being all wibbly wobbly. The first Doctor is William Hartnell. That's a fact, people. And we are going with a fifth Doctor novel. It's Lords of the Storm by David A. McEntee, a gentleman who is of the wonderful parish of Scotland, and he used to live near Falkirk. And talking of which, today's co-conspirator also used to live in Falkirk. You better say hello, co-conspirator.
Yeah, I used to have a lovely view from one window of the beautiful rolling hills, and from the other window, the Grangemouth Refinery. It's like looking at heaven and then looking at hell. Yes, I'm Matt Michael. I used to live in Falkirk.
You did? How long did you live there?
4 years.
And then you had to escape back to England.
And then, yes, I moved to London after that. Yeah.
But you survived it.
Yeah, like most Scottish people, I moved to London.
Well, I didn't last very long when I went to work down there, so... which I'm quite glad about because I enjoyed coming back home. But yes, that was 2015. That's quite scary. I actually worked on my 41st birthday in that London, in Canary Wharf, in the Torchwood Tower.
No, I don't believe it. You're only 36.
I love you, Matt Michael. Moving swiftly on, today we are talking about Lords of the Storm, which was the 17th novel in the Virgin Missing Adventures range. And as we said, it was written by David and featured the Fifth Doctor and Turlough, and was published on the 7th of December 1995. So I was just 21, nearly 21 and a half by a matter of 12 days. That's kind of scary. How old were you in 1991, Matt? Or 1995, I should say.
1995, 14. No, it wasn't. That's rubbish. That's a lie. 15.
My goodness. Child. And did you buy this book when it came out?
It's the first Virgin novel that I bought and read. Yes.
That is fantastic. And I know already that this is a book you've got an awful lot of fondness for, mm-hmm. partly because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've said before in another place that the TV movie really sort of re-engaged me with Doctor Who, which I'd loved in the 80s when I was a kid, but I sort of drifted away from in the early 90s. And when the New Adventures first came out, I was kind of aware of them, but I was also aware that they weren't... I was a big fan of the Target novelizations, and I was aware it wasn't like a novelization. It was something a bit different. I was a little bit suspicious of them, and... I think I looked at like Genesis or Apocalypse or something like that. It didn't quite float my boat when I was sort of 10. So I'd never really engaged with them. And I sort of drifted away a little bit from Doctor Who. Then there's a lot of publicity in TV Zone magazine, which I used to read at that point, around the TV movie. And then you see the book reviews, including... Lords of the Storm, and I was like, well, it's got some Tyrans in it, it's got the Fifth Doctor in Turlough, which along with Tegan are the first team that I can remember as a kid, and probably hugely fond of that TARDIS team. That's my sort of gateway drug to Doctor Who, so I thought, yeah, okay, I'll give that one a go, and picked it up, and here we are many years later.
Yeah, I had a great time when I reread it, because I thought, really want to do this one, because I hadn't read it since it came out. And yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. Shall we have a quick listen to what the back cover blurb has to say?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay, here we go. They've been fighting this war for longer than man has been walking upright, and they don't take prisoners. There's my very bad Fifth Doctor impression there, out of breath by the end of it. Anyway, the war between the Sontarans and the Rutans has been raging for millennia. Billions have died and whole star systems have been obliterated in the conflict. Now, finally, one side may have victory within its grasp. The human colony world of Raggi is crucial to that victory. When the Fifth Doctor and Turlough arrive there, they find a seemingly stable society ruled by a strict caste system. But all is not as it seems. Members of the lower caste are being struck down by a mysterious illness. People are vanishing in their hundreds, and strange objects have been observed orbiting the sun. Why is Raggi so important to the fusing alien empires? And how high a price will the galaxy pay if the conflict comes to an end? There we go. I have to say, just when I'm reading it now, when I see the word Raggi, I just want to go, Raggi? In my best or worst Scooby-Doo voice, because that amuses me. But yeah, I think it's a great fun novel, because the thing that I really remember about it, and it's a complete misremember, is that there's loads of space battles and things like that going on in this. And there's not. There really aren't. There's one chapter where pretty much it's an escape in a spaceship, but other than that, it's very few and far between. There's moments with the student blade heading towards the planet, but generally, there's not that much in the way of space stuff going on. People are inside the spaceship, and there's people talking to each other.
I think it's sort of very Ian Martyr. It's got a sort of Ian Martyr vibe to it, an Ian Martyr novel vibe, I should say. There's lots of sort of gore and ooze bits in it, which I think works really well for a sort of Fifth Doctor and Turlough story in a season 21 story, where I always think of that as being a very gory, oozy season. You've got the sea devils like spurting the green gunk out of their eyes, and the malice, and Davros and the Daleks spraying everywhere. So it kind of, it's got that sort of, that same sort of vibe to me in it. Very accurate.
I also like the fact that there's an explanation given as to why Sontarans look different. There's different castes here. For example, there's the Lynx clan, which of course, for those of us who, or is it the Jingle clan? And because we know that Lynx's first name is Jingle, if you've read the Robert Holmes novelization. So we get explanations for all the different sorts, including the Shakedown.
Yes.
More yellowy, olivey coloured ones as well.
Yeah. And the sort of strange, sort of slimline ones, tall ones from the Two Doctors.
Yeah. Which I think was actually quite a nice way of doing it. To explain the differences away, because let's be honest, as fans, these things do worry some of us. Maybe not us particularly, but it does keep others awake at night.
Yeah. Now that was cool. And I think it, at the time when I first read it, obviously, because it was the first one I'd read, I had no idea about the sort of Zune and the sort of wider David McEntee sort of future history that he creates, but it nicely ties into things like First Frontier and the Dark Path, and it kind of paints this sort of slightly joined up future history, which is sort of quite a nice touch across his books.
Yeah, definitely. We throw in also Mission Impractical, where we get Havel Trochny in there as well, but of course that's still to come at this point. But we don't know about it because Virgin still have the license here. But yeah, also the thing that I really enjoyed is that Turlough is so well written for. He's got that world-weary disdain for everything.
Mm. Yeah, that one of the joys of Turlough, I think, is that he's not your typical companion. He's not sort of wide-eyed and like awed by everything. He's a little bit cynical and jaded, which you could sort of argue didn't really need another Davison companion to be a bit cynical and jaded by everything they come across, given most of the others were as well. But I think it works sort of better with Turlough because of his background than maybe some of the others, who ought to be a little bit more excited by space travel and time travel and things like
that. And also, quite frankly, more grateful.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, yeah. We're looking at you, Miss Jovanka. But there we go. Yeah. So, yeah.
He's a jolly good smack button.
Well, just don't ask her to make the tea. So, shall we go from tea to Mr. McEntee?
Yes.
Yeah, my name's David McEntee. as Kenny said, I wrote Lords of the Storm. You do not catch me at my best. I've got a bit of a bug.
No.
I'm kind, but I shall try and remember fun or interesting things.
Fantastic.
Ideally prompted by fun and interesting questions.
I shall try my best, David. I shall try my best. I suppose, first thing first, do you remember how the commission for this one came about?
Yeah, actually, I did. I know it was separate from Terence doing the novel version of Shakedown. Originally, I'd pitched a second Doctor and Cybermen story, which had been called Cold Steel, and it was second Doctor and Jamie. We'd still have the same planet, and essentially the people on the planet had left Earth like thousands of years earlier using technology that had long since been forgotten. And so it was on the way that Mondas would take, and so these mere modern like invasion type Cybermen were working a bit there waiting to prevent Mondas from getting to Earth and being blown up, but do something better with it. And the editorial team had been, well, they had just done or quite recently done they'd done a Cyberman story, I think it was Killing Ground maybe, and did I want to change it to something like the Sontarans or wait a year? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I could change it to the Sontarans, you know, rather than wait another year, because I wanted the cash. Free money. So yeah, so that's how it came about. And also I thought it'd be interesting to write for Peter Davison and Doc, because apart from Troughton, he in the classic era I think is the best actor Doctor. You know how there are like two different types of Doctors really, and especially in the classic series you've got the actor Doctors and you've got the, this is where the personality Doctor. So that was also, I thought, going to be fun. And then they said, oh yeah, Terence is doing Shakedown as well, so we can coordinate them and bring them out in the same month. So that happened.
It's a great tie-up. I mean, I remember seeing the Shakedown premiere and back at, gosh, 1994, and how things changed, and just thinking this would be, you know, hopefully it'll get novelised, and the fact that Terence did it and the fact you're able to tie in with it, and obviously you've got the Rutan agent on the go, the one escaping.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'm happiest with it, and I think a couple of reviewers mentioned it in among the positives, was the idea that, yeah, you've got a viewpoint character who at one point suddenly you realise, yeah, everything you've had from his viewpoint is 100% true and accurate, I'm not lying to you, but you've been interpreting it completely 180 degrees.
That's exactly what I remember, because I remembered, I think it was about halfway through when rereading there, and then I remembered, hang on a minute,
yeah,
that's who the Rutan is, and then everything, you know, from that point, you know, went back a wee bit, it's like, of course it is, and it's there, but it's hidden in plain sight.
Yeah, because I guess that's the universal nature of whichever creatures are in that anthropomorphized form of soldiery or warfare. You know, there are universal elements that you're going to require intelligence and information, you're going to require whichever tactical systems and so on, you're each going to have your strategies, and it's just, yeah, you suddenly realize, yeah, he's got all of those just from the other side.
Very, very good. Yeah, something that I also enjoyed and I had completely forgotten about was that you've got the explanation as to why there's all the difference on Tarans with all the different clans. So we've got, obviously, we've got the Lynx sort in the cover.
Yeah.
But you explain the Styre sort with fire hands, five fingers on their hands. And then also the Shakedown version as well, who are from the desert parts of Sontar, or Sontara, as we used to call it.
Yeah, I forget whether it's called Sontara or Sontar. Yeah, it just seemed to make logical sense because they keep changing them every now and again, but they're not mechanical like Cybermen, where you keep upgrading them. So it meant, well, there must be a reason why all these supposedly identical clones aren't. And it's like, well, of course you'd be a spotted genetic engineer, or you clone like so many from one group and so many from this other group who are better at that, and so on and so forth. I vaguely remember there's something like that in DWM's comic strip way back in the day, and I forget whether that's before or after, but I think that kind of the memory I have in my head is that I think those things would dovetail nicely, you know.
Yeah. I think you've got like the Jingle Clan, which is, explains what Lynx looks like, and therefore that ties in with the novelization with Jingle Lynx, and
yeah, where that's his first name or something.
Yeah, but now it's his clan name first, so we know all these things. So it was a really nice touch, which made me smile. And how did you find writing for the different Sontarans? Because when I'm reading it back now, I'm hearing Dan Starkey voicing the whole lot of them.
Which is not bad, considering it was like, 20 years before the TV show came back, and more than that since the Sontarans reappeared. I mean, they're still clones. I think I was just going by character. It's like, okay, you've got the Blockhold General and stuff like that, who I think I vaguely had a sort of ear of Stephen Fry in Blackadder as General Melchett. And I forget who, somewhere I'll have notes that have a little cast list who I want to hear. I forget who they'd be now, because it's been
30 years since you wrote it, so
a ridiculous thought. Yeah, I was quite disturbed week before last when I realized last year was 30 years since White Darkness came in, the first one.
Wow.
And this year is 20 years since my last one came in, 11th Tiger.
Wow. Where's the time gone? It's quite terrifying. It's quite terrifying.
Mainly it went in either writing for other things or in nonfiction and editing for Osprey and people like that, you know, military history. Which I also enjoy.
Also, the Doctor and Turlough. A combination we didn't get much of in TV, but I think you got that wonderful sort of cynical, jaded Turlough sort of being world weary when he's somebody so young but just so hacked off and frustrated with everybody around him.
Yeah, it's just a case of, you know, watch all the episodes and try and get where he ended up, especially in Planet of Fire, because before that he's hugely variable. So he's kind of more based on the Planet of Fire version. I think that's when it's set, actually, of course, is between Resurrection and Planet of Fire. So, I guess that's probably something I would have thought of doing consciously.
Yeah.
But beyond that, all I can say is, really, that's the job, you know, that you're paid to do these kinds of things, and so hopefully it worked. And it's been too long for me to remember specifically what I was thinking.
There's just little asides from him when he's just sort of frustrated with life in general, and sort of being treated like a schoolboy still, that and things like that, where he's sort of talking about ruling clans and ruling families and being able to relate that way.
Yeah, because that's also from Planet Fire, obviously, or foreshadowing Planet Fire.
Very nicely done. And of course, something else that sort of foreshadows is that, in fact, we've got on the planet of Raggi, we've got the whole, is that the correct pronunciation? Was that how you would go for it?
Probably. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, it would need the Indian accent. And obviously, I am very much not Indian. But back in the day, because, I mean, you know, I wrote one set in China and this one set on an Indian planet. And, you know, I'd love to see how these things would have been done by, you know, Chinese writers or an Indian writer or whatever, but we didn't. I mean, I don't know if we had anybody at the time pitching them, but we certainly didn't have any writing them in the books. And it's, you know, there was always a thought, I want to get away from the south coast of England kind of thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully try and encourage, if they continued, hopefully try and encourage, like, somebody to go, how dare this guy write the stuff about my culture? I'll do it. And then, excellent. Right?
Yes. Because that's the thing, like, as you say, that's, you know, the fact you've got descendants of people from India on their own world, and that's something that is a real change from, you know, pretty much the white middle class world that we've come to expect.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that really struck me.
And also that's exactly the stuff I wanted to get away from, is that home counties middle class thing. And of course, we had several non-white cannon fodder in Resurrection, which I thought, we can do better than that. And there was also, that's really back in the 90s when both India and China were really sort of making headlines about, certainly in the science magazines, about their space programs. And it's like, great. Why is it always just the Americans and the Russians? You know, everybody else is doing it, and rightly so.
Absolutely. It ties in. Yeah, very much so. And just something else, just mentioning sort of contemporary things, that we've got the rutan as the gender neutral, which of course is something that back in the 90s, again, that was something like, what? This isn't something you'd particularly come across. And again, it's been ahead of things.
Completely not a conscious decision. It just seemed natural. I mean, they're blobs, they're jellyfish. How would you, you know, how would they even come up with a concept like different genders? So it's just trying to be true to an alien species, albeit an imaginary one, and not a deliberate. I mean, if I was writing it new, it would be deliberate.
Yeah.
But there's so many things like that we all wrote back then that in the past 20, 30 years, suddenly we've gone like, but actually this has now happened, and this is now a thing, and this is now good. I mean, sci-fi writers must get that a lot when they write something or imagine something, and then it becomes more real world relevant, you know, a couple of decades later, and they're like,
yeah, very much so. And also, the thing that I was smiling when referring to, when you've got the at the end, is sort of Rutan is a singular for Rutan. Rutan is plural. And then it's got, from where we're seeing things from Karn's point of view, we're getting, talking about Rutan in singular, Sontaran singular, and human singular, because it's sort of their mindset and to use that way. And I thought that was quite a nice wee touch, and it made me smile, sort of gives you that alien culture.
Yeah, and like I say, it's all about being, you know, figuring out, okay, they've got whatever culture, try and be true to it in all things. You know, why would they change their way of thinking for other races. We know the Sontarans do, because you've got that bit in Time Warrior where Lynx identifies Sera as, you know, what is it, the thorax is of a different construction, etc., etc. But he still doesn't know what that means. He just thinks, wait, are there two species on this planet?
yeah, nice touch. I think that the whole Sontaran plan, hinging on tagging the humans as being Sontarans to divert the routine, what a wonderful, wonderful idea that it just seems so obvious, sort of like a bit of war trickery and luring them in. It's a nice,
yeah,
a nice way of doing it. And of course then using the Toon Blade to wipe out and turn the planet into a star.
I forget how much of that element was from the original Cybermen version, but I think some of it will have been. But then once we've got, rather than they're trying to reunite their race, once you've got two Warren species, then it sort of quickly became it's all a trap for the enemy, except the enemy are on the inside.
Yeah, I also spotted the Admiral Ackbar reference with "It's a trap."
Oh yeah, I had to do that.
Which did make me smile. Of course, just talking Admiral Ackbar and such things, spaceships and things. Now, this is the thing that I mentioned at the start. It's not quite how I remembered it, because I remembered there being an awful lot more sort of space battles and spaceships, and there's nowhere near what I expected. And that was a real surprise, because there's enough, because I remembered, you know, spaceship sequences and action sequences and things like that, but there's nowhere near the degree that I expected. There's a hell of a lot more human story in there, and I think that's something that's almost become like a fan myth over the years, because there's only really one chapter where it's all spaceship action.
Basically there's kind of like a spaceship chase in the middle, and then there's a sort of space battle part somewhere in like the last or second last chapter. But I think that proves that I know people get bored with these kind of things if they last too long. I think somebody, I don't know if it was yourself or somebody else on the review, had said something like that day of the space battle like that is lasts too long is the equivalent of like a 10-minute drum solo in the song.
No, I wouldn't be that. I wouldn't have said that. I'm not.
I thought it was funny. But I think this is, I'd like to think it's because it did it well, that's the bit you remember. I mean, yeah, I'd prefer you remember the other, you know, human interaction stuff and, you know, the gags and the serious throwing or dramatic bits. But yeah, it's very often the case, actually. I mean, there's quite a few of the books that I've done, you think, oh, it's all nonstop. And then when you go back and it's like, now, wait a minute.
So much of it I remembered. I mean, I remembered all the stuff with the, you know, the planetary stuff and sort of like the Sontaran infiltration and things like that, and sort of like the, you know, trying to evade them, and like Turlough's trying to evade capture, and when there's like the Sontaran infiltration, I remembered that and thinking that's something I remembered really well. And so yeah, it's nice to be pleasantly surprised. Now, something that this must have been for you a bit of a treat, because it meant that pretty much it was your imagination doing the work, rather than having, you know, with your previous books, with the amount of research you'd done in there to get, you know, his accurate Earth settings, whereas here we're off world.
Oh yeah, I like to have some variety, and obviously, you know, going back to, you know, in the BBC, it's always like England's home counties. But if it's the future or something, it's always, we'll put some sparkly tinfoil on some cardboard and that's a set. No, you want it more believable. So the variety was good. It's like, I cannot worry too much about the accuracy, because, I've made up this planet. I mean, it's still to do research. how stars actually work and stuff like that if you were trying to set one off. But
yeah,
but it was definitely definitely a nice change, and I always liked when I could to vary it a bit. So that's why after that point, it's like, yeah, then you get, for me, I mean, I think you get Shadow of Wang Chang, so that's the 30s, and then you get the Dark Path, so again, that's the planet in the future, and so on, and they sort of alternate a bit, facing the enemies, the 1970s, and Wages of Sin is 1916, and then you get, again, Alien Planet. It's nice. I like, yeah, it's nice to mix. It's nice to have that variety.
Yeah, keeps you on your toes as well.
And especially once you've already sort of established a thing, as people think, oh yeah, he's the guy who'll do the historic sentence. Like, well, okay, yeah, we know that, so we know I can date that, so I need to do something else.
So working with Terence, that's something I have to mention, because you mentioned that there's the Lucy Dane. I mean, that must have been, for you as a fan, sort of, that must have been a real joy, just getting to chat with the great man and swap ideas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was great fun. because they'd shown him, like, what my synopsis was and stuff like that. And there's a point, I think, where we had been chatting about, yeah, it was, you know, the Sontaran clans and how the Rutan host was and all this, which he'd create, and all this stuff. And he's just in the, you know, it's like a novelization where the movie is the meat in the sandwich and it's bookended by the new bit. And he said to me when we were looking over the notes, and he just says, right, you know, yeah, you're being all this great stuff with the culture and stuff, so you just do your thing with the culture, I'll do my thing with the story, and that was that.
Yeah.
And then we had a signing, I think, when they came out as well, we had a signing with, I think Sophie was there, Sophie Aldred, and me and Terence, and who else? There was a couple of other people, I think. There's a point where the queue was so long that Terence got up and started going along the queue. To get to queue, rather than make them wait. And then I did that as well, and then Sophie did it. And in the end, the whole queue thing sort of just devolved into a, like, 1970s sitcom dinner party, you know, at two Ronnie's, where everybody's just gone up to people and gone, yeah.
There we go. That's magic. And of course, one of my favourite things are the two Scottish Sontaran names in here. We've got General Skelp and Colonel Lug. And of course, for those with a non-Scottish persuasion, a skelp's like a wee smack round the ear, and a lug is another word for the ear. Brilliant.
Yeah. And General Skelp is Terence named him, because I had originally gone Skelp. You know, an annoying thing stuck in your finger or wherever.
Yep.
For the benefit of the non-Scottish listeners. And he misheard it, Skelp, or misread it as Skelp. And I went, that is a better name. I should have done that. So that's how it became Skelp rather than Skelf. I think there's another Skelf ended up somewhere in it, but I could be wrong. But that's how General Skelp ended up being called. That was Terence's idea.
It couldn't be more perfect, because it sounds Sontaran and it also is appropriate for a bit of violence in there. So yeah, it made me laugh. Still does, because I knew he was coming up, but even then his name was like, yay, there we go, it's Skelp. And then of course, finally, David, the cover. What a beauty from Alistair Pearson for you.
It is awesome.
It must have been, you know, when you first saw it, you know, we first sent it, that must have been just sort of like perfect.
Yeah, there are covers that have been less good, but of the Alistair Pearson ones, I just like, yeah, that's by far my favourite. And that's a close run thing with Shadow of Wang Chai, which is also another great one. But I think that's my favourite of those.
Yeah.
Just with that, like, links with, you know, the planet and the rings by.
Yeah, it's a shame that it's not been issued as a proper poster print, because it's beautiful, beautifully painted. Yeah. But maybe one day I'll still do them, who knows. So how do you look back on Lords of the Storm as a whole, David? It's one of many books that you wrote.
Yeah. No, actually, I enjoyed it, you know. I enjoyed doing it. I thought it was fun. It was nice to get away from a historical setting, although it's still dealing with a you know, not a middle class English setting, so it's still trying to do something different. No, I mean, I don't think we had the word cultural appropriation there back then, but it was definitely sort of a thing that I was thinking, yeah, probably an Indian writer should do this, but if none of them are, you know, doing them yet, then maybe this will inspire one to come along and do it better. You know, one hopes. I mean, I know that, for example, that what inspired Lance Parkin to write Just War, I remember him saying in an interview once, was how bloody awful White Darkness was. And he thought, I can do better, so he went and did. And it's like, sorry, am I supposed to be offended or say, you know, because it's like, that's great. You know, you've spread it, you've encouraged.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. If somebody's, if you've inspired somebody to put pen to paper or finger to keyboard, then it can't be a bad thing.
You know, I think the love of books and the love of reading and writing, I think, need to be spread by whatever means. I mean, I made it clear for you when the pandemic started that, I put my documents on here, Google Drive, so that, you know, if people are keen to read them and aren't bothered that, oh, it has to be part of the collection, it has to be on paper, they can go there and grab them, you know, in PDFs. I don't think it counts as piracy, because it'd be pirating myself, you know.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So, David, before we finish up, where can people find you on social media if they want to perhaps read these books, if they haven't read them, and get in touch with you and find this Google Drive?
Well, I'm on Twitter. I refuse to call it X.
Good man.
As the Lone Magpie. I think it's the _ Lone Magpie. All one word. And I'm on Facebook under my own name. And I'm also in Pillow Fort as Lone Magpie as well. So those are the main place.
Fantastic. Well, David, it's been really, really good fun as always. So thank you for taking the time to have a wee chat about Lords of the Storm. And hopefully we'll have you back on chatting about another of these 90s gems before too long.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll be something that, yeah, I have some memories of, or can generate some memories of, because memory doesn't work the way people think it does. People think, you know, it's like a computer hard drive and it reads the stored data, and that's not how it works. Every time you have a memory, parts of the brain interact to kind of create part of the event or the emotion or the knowledge anew, which is how it can go horribly wrong sometimes.
If only we could defrag ourselves at time.
But not a lot of people know that.
Yeah, fantastic. David, thanks again.
No worries. Always happy to do these things.
Now, let's have a quick check to see what a review had to say about this book, and I've got one here which is from Volume 1 of I Who. So let's see if we agree with it or disagree with it, Matt. At the end of the day, on page 116 of volume 1 of Aihu, McEntee warns us in his introduction to expect an action-based space opera, and indeed, it is so. Problem is, it's tough to pull off decent space battles in books, making Lords of the Storm a thick, cliched shoot-em-up with few surprises and a frightful amount of techno-babble. I'm going to respectfully disagree with what Lars Pearson and his team had to say in that, as I think it actually was engaging, it was interesting, good characters, the fact that there was something different done, and of course there's the traitor at the end, Major Karn,
yes, of course,
gets away, and that's who we encounter in Shakedown.
Yeah, I think that's an unnecessarily harsh review. I think it's one of Dave McEntee's better novels. I remember enjoying it at the time, and I enjoyed it again. It's not perfect, but I think that review overstates how much space techno babble there is. There's lots of really sort of nice sort of semi-horror moments. I think it works pretty well. I think it works pretty well as a season 21 novel. And I'm a big proponent of, we need more season 21. We've definitely been brutally denied enough season 21 Tegan and Turlough from Big Finish over the years. I think we've got two stories. That's it, just two.
I agree. It's such a great tie-in, I think, with Shakedown, because I loved Shakedown. I saw it when it was premiered at the aforementioned Dreamwatch convention back in 94. And yeah, it was... In fact, no, we didn't mention it. That was off mic. We were chatting about the Avengers programme, guys.
Yes.
But yes, I went to the convention and saw the premiere of Shakedown and had a great time at it. So I've always had a soft spot for it. And of course, given that this ties in...
Did you Caroline Ford?
I didn't get
to meet...
Well, I was there when Darren Scott, the SFX editor, bought her Zor-El outfit, which she still has and used to pop on occasionally when we went to parties. So I have pictures of Darren wearing this glamorous outfit and looking fabulous.
You've just got Sophie Aldred's outfit.
No, sadly not.
No comment.
That said, I actually did see an airlock sign being donated last weekend as we speak to the Museum of Classic TV and Sci-Fi and in Allendale when I went to the Monster Men convention, and Robert Dick donated that to the museum. So it's a nice wee sort of spin-off bit. It was an airlock sign, which, and this is the really sad thing, I was sat at the back with Dave Steele. We were watching it and I said, that's the sign from Shakedown. And Dave just turned to me and said, is it? How do you know? Like, it just is. And then it was confirmed by Keith Barnford. I said, this is from Shakedown. I think even my levels of sadness to recognise signs from a Doctor Who spin-off have sort of taken me to a new high, or indeed a new low, depending on how you look at it.
Well, if Great Britain ever has to give back the Elgin marbles, at least we know we've got something in their place.
I always used to think the Elgin marbles were like round things. You know, just like marbles. When I hear the word marbles, that's what I think of. Not like statues of guys going, oh, and such like, or flopping it out. But yes, there we go. So I think it's fair to say that we both enjoyed Lords of the Storm, and I think it's, as you said, it's definitely one of David's stronger books and very, very enjoyable even now.
I agree.
Brilliant. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time and coming on today. And will you come back in 3 days' time to join us once again to chat about a Mr. McGann book?
Yeah, I'll think about it.
Okay, well, you get thinking. And in the meantime, I'm going to give us a tune to play out with today. And given that we always like to have something that ties in with it, I thought we could go for a Cyndi Lauper song, Calm Inside the Storm. You're nodding your approval there.
I strongly approve.
Excellent. We'll be back tomorrow with a sixth Doctor book. We'll be sticking in Missing Adventures territory, but which one could it be? Find out when Dave Steele will be back with me, and we'll hopefully have some fun with it. Until then, bye-bye from me, Kenny.
And from me, Matt Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye.